Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 129 of Nerd Pride Radio. 129, you get your pick today. Either LZ-129, which was the designation of the airship Hindenburg of Oath of Humanity fame, or U.S. Immigration Services I-129 form, which is a petition for non-immigrant labor. I mean, when I do a Google search for a number, starting off one of these episodes, it is very rare to have a specific use of that number come up in the results ahead of, like, the number itself or the year or whatever. And I-129, the request for non-immigrant labor, that came up first and second. So, important form. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd plus. There's probably like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. My co-hosts this week from the Fantasy Movie League, my best friends in the world, Master 8 and Steve. Oh, all right. Before we get into the heavy stuff, that's right. It's time for yet another installment of our all-too-frequent segment, Mike Was Wicked Wrong! Apparently, last week I said that Talvin got his first death in the Nerd Pride Deadpool, which was true. He did. And he was very broken up about that, it seems. And I had mentioned that it was weird because Talvin had been in the Deadpool for quite a while, and yet had never gotten a death before. He informed me that, no, this is actually his first year. I don't know why I thought he was in before, so I was wrong. On the other hand, also this week now, Talvin apparently has put Yoko Ono in the hospital because, well, she's in the hospital and on his list. I don't think that's a coincidence. I mean, seriously, 2 weeks in a row, this guy is getting aggressive about his Deadpool. That's what I'm saying. All right, enough of all that. It's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, which has completely fallen apart. I'll get to that in a minute. And then the best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And if you hear any hacking and coughing in the background, that is my lovely wife, Lisa, who is apparently dying of something upper respiratory and yet insisting on working anyway. So that's just her. Don't worry about it. I'm sure I'll have it by next week, and then you guys can hear it in all of its full glory. But anyway, straight into the master list. First thing up, my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games, if it fits on my gaming table, I am here to share it with you. My gaming table's getting bigger. Yeah, we finally had Eli's Scout Gaming Night that he wanted to put together so badly, and it went off beautifully. It was really, really nice. We brought a huge box of our own games, and all the other kids were invited to bring stuff of their own if they wanted to. Which was probably the first mistake, because, you know, if you let them bring their own games, then they want to play them, and who wants to do that? So, but no, we had a good time. They played anything from just regular checkers and chess, which was really cool, having a couple of kids who were new to chess and learning, and so we had people sitting around kibitzing and helping them out with stuff, and it was actually a really fun time with that one. And what else did we do? we did. Oh, well, I opened up with a little bit of them's fighting words, because you always got to enjoy them's fighting words. And so they got into the cowboy insults, and everyone had a good time with that. We played some Carcassonne, which was awesome. And, well, I'll get to that in just a minute. We also wrapped up the night after everything else. We wrapped up the night with some Munchkin, because, once again, everybody loves Munchkin, which actually I found out is not true. I can't remember who it was that told me that Munchkin is just not their favorite game. They never got into it. I can't remember who that communist was, but most normal people love Munchkin, and this was no exception. Had two of the kids had never played before, and as usual, you know, the first 2-3 levels as you're going around the table, you can tell people are just lost, and then suddenly there's that moment when it clicks, and all of a sudden they're ready to start stabbing people in the back, and they know exactly what they're doing to pull this off. And it was really, really nice, because one of them, he's a really, really quiet kid. I mean, really quiet. You can't get this kid to raise his voice for nothing. And he was just, you never know if he's quite getting it or not, but he's a super smart kid. And so all of a sudden, you know, when the chips are down, I mean, he was just out of his hand, just out of nowhere. The card just appears on the table, and oh yeah, it devastates him, devastates the other guys. And it was just a great time. And they ultimately, they won on a tie, of all things, because it got to where three of them were all at ninth level, all vying for that final spot. I mean, just the first guy who could get something he could beat, and, you know, everyone's run out of cards at this point. We're just waiting for the first guy who can beat something and walk away with the win. And one of them, you know, like, there was no way he could do it by himself, but hey, he invites his friend over who happens to be an elf. And if you've played Munchkin, then you understand that that means both of them got level, both of them won at the same time. And it was the two new guys. And so they, I mean, it was really, really great. It was very rewarding to see. And so they all had so much fun. Oh, I played Moncala while I was there. I forgot about how much I love Moncala. Lisa's got a set in her classroom, and we used to play all the time, and I've just kind of forgotten about how much I enjoy that. It was really fun. Anyway, having said all of that, everyone had so much fun that they were immediately looking at, okay, when we do this next time, what do we want to do differently? Because they all, there's no question that there's going to be a next time. It's just a matter of when and how. And so I'm really excited. Really excited that they had such a good time with it. And then, the next night, it was, Eli went off with some friend of his, and Aiden had to work, and so it was just me and Noah sitting around, and we decided, you know what, why don't we play some games, just the two of us. And we had such a good time. I kicked his butt all over the place at several games of Battle Sheep, which that's the simplest game that we play, and I'm really, really good at beating him on that one. But then he kicks me all over on everything else. We played Carcassonne again, and this time we finally decided, you know, we've been using the Inns and Cathedral set. And then we decided, okay, all right, we've had the Builders and Traders set sitting here for a while. Let's throw that one into the mix and start building in some of these rules. And they were really awesome and not nearly as complicated as I was thinking it was going to be. For those of you who haven't played Carcassonne, it's a bunch of map tiles, little square map tiles that you just take turns pulling a tile out of the bag, find a little match out on the board where you have to line up the edges so the pieces match. And then you can claim stuff and take points for cities and roads and all sorts of other things. And Noah is just really good at this. Really good. His sense of where the points are going to be, is just fantastic. And so he wound up, he didn't quite get with the Traders and Builders. He wasn't quite getting the sense of claiming goods as well as I did. And so I got, you know, 30 bonus points because I claimed the most wine and the most wheat and the most, cloth. I mean, I had all those points. And yet even with that, he still beat me 205 to 185. It was just crazy. But we had a good time. Love playing Carcassonne. Anyway, the next thing to expand my gaming table is a couple weeks ago, Lisa, my lovely wife, winds up pulling up a picture on Facebook and says, oh, you have to come look at this. And I look, and our local arts center had a community game night. And there's a whole table full of people playing board games and card games. I'm like, oh my God, how did I not know this was coming? Because, you know, we love the Arts Center. We do stuff with them all the time. And I had no idea. And so a couple days later, based on that picture, I called down the Arts Center. I'm like, okay, what is this game night thing and how do I make myself a part of it? And so they got me connected to the right person. And apparently she is an employee at the Arts Center whose husband is very big into games like this. And so therefore, since she's part of the art center, she put it together with, you know, getting everything reserved and making sure they had everything they needed and all this. And then he brought the games and the enthusiasm. And apparently they've got another session coming up next month, and they're going to do this every month. And, ooh, holy crap, I'm going to see if I can make myself a part of this. And they're like, well, you know, if you'd like to run a table, if you've got games that you really like and you want to just run a table for us, I'm like, would I? Of course. So, I said, I'm happy to run a table. I'm happy to just, you know, float around and share stuff. I'm happy to play anything anyone's got. I'll do it. In my excitement, I probably gushed a little bit too much about how enthusiastic I was about wanting to come down there because, you know, again, it's her husband who's the big gamer. And not that she isn't a gamer herself, I'm sure, but she was making it very clear that, oh, yeah, it sounds just like my husband. Yeah, that's okay. So, but I was just gushing. I'm just ready to play. So, unfortunately, their next session is on prom night for Aiden. So Aiden can't go, and we'll see how the timing works out, because for the parents, I don't think we have to show up until like 11 o'clock at night for prom, to show up for the after prom party. So, but we'll see how that works out. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it to this one, but even if I don't, they're going to do it every month. I'll have plenty of opportunities. So this will be great. That's it for my gaming table. Next up, all right, here's the whole point. My poor little pocket mod here has completely disintegrated. I mean, it's got several pages fallen out of it. It's almost completely full, but not quite, but it's past its prime. It's time for me to throw this one away and, well, put it in the file and make myself a new one. So in order to clear it off and get everything out of here, it's time to do a little fingertips.
Fingertips, fingertips, fingertips.
Okay, so this is all the topics that just kind of pile up on my master list, and I never quite get around to using them. So now I'm just going to use them. Prep, no prep, doesn't make any difference. We'll just go through them and see what happens. This one's a game topic, and it is rules heavy versus rules light. And which one do I prefer, I'm guessing, is what I meant. And look, for me, when I'm playing a role-playing game specifically, I tend to write my own games to be very rules light, but that may just be because I'm lazy. And, you know, because it's also, as a game master, it's easy to wing it. I mean, if I've already designed the game myself and I know kind of what I'm looking for, then I can just make things up as I go along. And I prefer doing rules light stuff for those quick one-offs, the one-shot games. You don't have to learn a lot. You don't have to teach a lot. You just sit down and, you know, you go. And so, like, for example, with Instant Game, we wrote Instant Game so that you could, you know, roll some dice and come up with a world and a plot and everything within, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and you're ready to run. And then you sit down for, you know, a 3-4 hour game session. Everything's over. You walk away. Wash your hands of it. But as I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, I prefer rules heavy, the really complicated stuff. I prefer that for longer term games, but then I realized I don't think I've ever played a rules-light game in a long version. I don't think I've ever done any of these rules-light games. I don't think I've ever done any of them for more than just one or two sessions at a shot. So, hard to say. I mean, well, okay, I guess maybe except for Paranoia. But Paranoia, and what I mean by that is Paranoia is, it's got a lot to it. I mean, the rule book is pretty hefty, but when we play it, we're doing it by email, and I just kind of wing it, and I don't actually use a whole lot of the actual rules. I'm just stealing the whole setting. And so therefore, yeah, we run those quite a while. But then again, it's also an email game, so it's hard to make a comparison. But I don't know. With the rules heavy stuff, I think what I like about it is the Pokemon effect, the idea of it gives players and game masters, it gives them a bunch of stuff that they need to learn and master and get better at. And it gets you more invested in the game because, you know, you understand what all those various bonuses and modifiers mean and all the conditions and the little, esoterica of, you know, specific spells or pieces of equipment or whatever. It gives you an awful lot of buy-in into the game itself. And I love leveling up. I love advancing a character. I mean, they're so cool when you have that opportunity to, oh, look, I've gained enough points. I get to add stuff to my character now, whether it's, you know, in giant bundles like Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder where, oh, you gain a level and now you add all sorts of stuff to everything all at once. Or, you know, even if it's incremental and you're playing a game where it's, oh, okay, I've earned enough karma that I can now jack up one of my skills by a point, or I can now, you know, add whatever it is that you add on. There's something about character advancement and, you know, not that you can't do character advancement in a rules-light game, but I just never have. Again, maybe it's just because I'm lazy and that's just how I write them. Who knows? But anyway, not a heavy topic and probably one that I've covered before in the Podomatics. But I had it written down for some reason. So, and then same thing right after it, I wrote, and this is again for role playing games. It talks about, just winging it, which I do quite a lot, versus using pre-planned modules versus writing out all that planning yourself versus, doing just randomness, just rolling the dice to determine what's going to happen next in the game as opposed to having it planned out for you. And looking at this, look, I like winging it. I do. I like being able to sit down to a game and just be able to kind of make stuff up as we go. And I like the idea that, oh, after a couple of sessions of, I've just been making it up. I've just been coming up with whatever's interesting. After a couple of sessions, you kind of start tying it back and you say, okay, well, but what if they were all connected? What if I was a real genius GM and I'd actually planned all this ahead of time? Oh, and then I start making the connections to it, and I start putting it all together. But I don't know. I found that as much as, and I enjoy randomness for the games. Again, instant game is the prime example of that, where everything, you just sit down and roll up. You have no idea what the setting's even going to be. That you just sit down and roll dice and whatever they come up with, okay, find a way to incorporate all of that. And I really, really get a kick out of that. But some of the better sessions I run are ones where we were working out of a module or something where I've done a whole bunch of pre-planning to kind of get everything together. Just because, I don't know. It's nice to have the stuff there so I'm not in the middle of whatever we're doing struggling to come up with a cool name for this random character that they just ran across or something like that. But having said all that, look, I gotta give it up to randomness, in the sense that we've tried when I'm at a loss for, you know, they turn a corner and I didn't have anything ready for this and I don't know what we're gonna do here. The idea that I roll up something on the random plot table or the random person table out of Instant Game, or I pull out one of my Pathfinder decks and I pull out a random plot point and just see what happens. Some of those have been some of the most fascinating stuff because it is something that I wouldn't have planned myself. I would never have thought to do that. But hey, the card says that, hey, there's a hidden door here. Really? Okay, well, let's go with that. Where does it lead? And I like having some randomizing element sometimes, just because, again, I wouldn't have thought to take the game in that particular direction. Or, you know, when they say that they're going to do something, every once in a while I'll say, well, let's do a situational roll. Just give me a percentile roll, and if it's a high number, it'll be something good for you guys, and if it's a low number, it'll be something bad for you guys. It's not anything anyone's doing or has any control over. It's just a, hey, we've popped into a new situation, and so, okay, good or bad, here we go. And no matter which way it turns out, it's usually winding up pretty interesting. So, so again, I love introducing some randomness into a game like that. Of the options I've given here, winging it is the one I do most often. It's probably the one I'm least satisfied with in the end. It's the lazy way out. But, so, you know, again, didn't prepare for this topic. I'm just looking at stuff on the page. So we can now cross it off. We're done. Next up. Okay, I wrote down monkey cards. We were out shopping for a birthday card, and I happened to see a really funny monkey card. And monkey cards have become self-aware. I don't know how often you shop for birthday cards and how many monkey cards you've seen. But maybe 15 years ago, I saw the first one where it was on the front. It says, so what did you want most for your birthday? You know, cash, expensive gifts. And then you open it up, and there's a big monkey on the inside, and it says, did someone say monkey card? To me, that was the funniest thing in the world. And since then, I've been in love with monkey cards. I don't know why. I mean, again, it's the same cheesy joke every time. And yet there's something about that that if I have the opportunity to buy a monkey card for somebody, I will probably do it. Speaking of monkeys and speaking of leveling up and advancement, Oh my God. So we're just in our Pathfinder game. We've just advanced to level 8. And so now, as a bard, I have a bunch of magic available to me, and the latest spell I've picked up is Mad Monkeys. And the more I read up on it, the more I'm really excited about this spell. In the middle of whatever situation, probably combat, I cast Mad Monkeys, and 300 tiny monkeys swarm in over whatever, and I can guide them wherever I want them to go, and they just crawl over everybody, tearing stuff up, stealing weapons, stealing items, breaking stuff, and then after about a minute or so, they disappear. They vanish into thin air. To me, this is the funniest thing ever. I'm really liking the spell, and of course, you know, I just put it down on paper, so it's not like I've had a chance to try it out yet. Maybe it'll turn out to be boring. Maybe it won't be that effective. But I'm pretty sure this is going to be really exciting the first time we have a swarm of monkeys running through the battlefield. I'm really looking forward to it. Let's see. Oh, speaking of swarms, I wrote down hands. All right, which I mentioned this a couple episodes ago, that I just have hands written here. And for a while, it took me a while to remember what it was that I was meaning by that. And specifically, again, we're back to Pathfinder, Dungeons and Dragons style. It is an undead hand swarm. That's what I'm looking for. I will have, and this is something I want to throw against my kids in a game at some point, but the idea that it's a bunch of reanimated hands all acting as a unit, all right? And specifically, like, the more hands you have in the swarm, the more of a hive mind they get, the more intelligent they become. So something like, I don't know, a point of intelligence for every 20 hands that they have. So thus, getting more hands makes them more powerful. So they're constantly crawling across the landscape looking for sentient life, which they can then kill and cut the hands off of and add to their swarm. To me, there's something really, really creepy about that. The idea that they're going to be somewhere and they're just going to get that lone hand spy, a scout hand that's been sent out to see what's going on. And they'll have warnings that something weird is going on, until eventually they run across the full swarm of hands. And I don't know, for some reason, I'm really entertained by that. So that's why I wrote it down. And I've actually now that I've technically supposed to cross it off the list, but I've had to circle it so I remember to write it down somewhere else. So after this pocket mod is gone, I'll remember to throw that at my kids. All right. All right. Back in episode 33 of this podcast, I talked about 1999 as my favorite year of all time for movies, with good reason. I mean, so many of my favorite movies came out of 1999. But as I was discussing this over at the Fantasy Movie League, someone brought up the summer of 82. This was posted up by an FML user named The Legend of Herschel Leon, and he put up the summer of 1982 as the greatest time for movies ever, and that includes E.T., Poltergeist, Wrath of Khan, Blade Runner, Conan, Tron, Road Warrior, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, The Thing, Pink Floyd's The Wall. Holy crap. All right, he's got a good case. I mean, I still stand by my 1999 as the greatest year for movies ever. But, man, that summer of 82 may have been one of the most formative periods of movies for me as a budding geek in 1982. I was 12 years old that summer. So, I mean, E.T., Poltergeist, Wrath of Khan, Conan, Tron. I remember me and my friends out with Frisbees, playing Tron battles with Frisbees out in the yard forever. We loved that. Again, 12 years old, the perfect time to be absorbing this, you know, into our geek psyche, our nerdhood. It was just, now some of those, I mean, things like, Fast Times and, The Wall and Blade Runner, I didn't see until much later. I didn't even realize they were from that summer, but, still, awesome, awesome movies that everybody knows. And even The Thing. Now, I shouldn't have watched The Thing in 1982, but it was the first horror movie that me and my friends ever watched. I have probably told you guys this story a couple of times, but it was me and several friends of mine. We were having a sleepover. We're 12 years old, and John Carpenter's The Thing is on HBO, and we scared ourselves silly watching that thing. It was my first real horror movie, and to me, it was the scariest thing I'd ever seen in my life. So yeah, absolutely formative. So anyway, summer of 1982, very good call, Herschel. I appreciate that. Let's see, what else is on my master list? Oh, hold on. had to switch pages there to get my notes. Let's see, cybersecurity? Okay, there's the fight right now between the feds and Apple, where Apple wants to encrypt everything on the iPhone. So essentially, all of your information on your iPhone is protected. All of the phone calls you make, all the text messages, everything that goes in and out of your iPhone is end-to-end encrypted, meaning you can see it and the person you sent it to can see it, but nobody in between, which means that if the feds go in and they have a court order and they ask for your information from Apple, Apple can basically say, well, we can give it to you, but it's encrypted, so even we can't make heads or tails of it. You're not going to get anything out of it, which I think is phenomenal. I think it's amazing that Apple is going to make that kind of stand and say, yeah, sorry, no, we're encrypting everything, and that's just how it works. And I would love to see Google follow suit on that, although Google makes too much money out of knowing who you are and knowing things about you. I mean, that's their money is, and this is, by the way, fascinating to me. I got this off the 538 podcast, and I'll mention them again in just a minute. But they were talking about how in the public consciousness, we kind of have this idea that Google and Facebook, they know everything about us and that they're selling off our information to make a profit. And the correction was made to the host of 538 to say that no, they're not selling your information. They don't sell your information to anybody. Google and Facebook have more vested interest in guarding your information than probably even you do sometimes, because they're not selling your information. What they're selling is your attention. They're selling your eyes to say that when they go to advertisers, they can say, oh, okay, you want 100,000 people who fit this demographic? Don't worry. You give us the ads. We will make sure those people see it. No. We can't tell you who they are, but we can make sure that they see it. So they're protecting your information and just giving you the ads based on that, which I, you know, okay, good that they're not selling our information, but, you know, they still know everything about us. But I found that really, really interesting. And so I doubt, because of that business model, I doubt Google is going to take the same hardline stance and follow suit with Apple to say that they'd be in favor of end-to-end encryption like that. But boy, it would be cool if they did, wouldn't it? I mean, just cool. 'Cause also, from that same podcast, he had an expert on, and she was talking about what you do to protect yourself. If you're interested in keeping your information private, she said there's a couple of simple apps that you can install that will do end-to-end encryption on your phone calls and on your text messages and will basically keep your information private, so that the only way someone can read your information is if they open up your phone or your laptop or your intended recipient's phone, laptop, whatever. If you're not you or the person you sent it to, then you don't get to read the information. Even if you can catch it in midstream out there somewhere, it's still encrypted. You can't see any of that. And then she also suggested that, make sure you password protect your phone. Yeah, I know. I keep meaning to do that. But and you know what? And once I do it, it won't be that big a deal. All right? The motions I have to make in order to unlock my phone will become so second nature to me that it'll be just as easy as swiping the darn thing. But part of me thinks that, yeah, but I look at my phone like, 300 times a day. Do I want to add some extra password that I have to put in 300 times a day just to open my phone screen? I know it's not really going to be as difficult as that, and I really, really need to do it. I just haven't gotten to it yet. And then the other thing, and I can't remember, I've heard this in more than one place, and I wish I could remember a source, but they also talked about, get yourself a password locker. Get yourself something that for every site you go to generates a unique and absolutely unbreakable password for that particular site. And none of your passwords are repeated. None of them are going to be easy to figure out. And as long as you have this password locker, it just takes care of all your passwords for you. And you don't have to worry about remembering passwords, and you don't have to worry about people being able to get into them. And okay, I get that. But that intimidates me. I know I should do it because it would be way more secure than even the good security passwords that I use now. And I say passwords because it's actually – I have about 4 base passwords and then lots of variations on how to build from those to make them unique for different places. And But it's still, you know, still at most 13 characters is all I'm using. It's not like I'm going all out. So yeah, I really should do all those things. I don't know. I'm just too set in my ways. I can't keep up with these young whippersnappers and their newfangled technology. I fear change. No. My wife is over there saying, well, thanks for telling everyone that our passwords are unsecured. No. Our passwords are way more secure than 99% of the passwords out there. Because I'm just saying that even though I'm doing something decent, that I use unique passwords for every site and I make sure that they're all, you know, not common words and that they include a whole mix of characters and that they're all, you know, 10 to 13 characters long, this kind of stuff. But, even with all of that, I mean, I'm providing super security for what is normally out there. But if we were to get some sort of password locker or some sort of software that did some of this for us, it would be way more secure than that. So really need to get on that. Let's see, what else is that? Oh, all right. Last thing on fingertips, and then we can move on, is I just wrote down combining interests. And I was thinking about this because my son, Jacob, he's in college now. He's getting a dual degree in computers and law. He's always loved computers, and that's where he started in college. But then he also found out that he actually really enjoys law. He enjoys the legal side of things as well. And so he's put them together into he's combined these two interests into A, cybersecurity is one part of it that he wants to go into, but also he got hooked up with a professor who has a real serious interest in cyber tracking. So things like, and Joel would be able to speak better to this because he did a lot of it with parole, the idea of having the ankle bracelets, the GPS tracking on his parolees and other stuff like this, and being able to take cyber tracking, and not just cyber tracking, but cyber statistics on looking at locations of crimes based on GPS stuff and looking at patterns. It just fascinates me. And I'm glad that he's found a way to put those together. And he doesn't know exactly what he's going to do when he graduates, but he's got a whole wealth of stuff out there to look at. And I'm excited for him for whatever he decides to do. But to go along with that, again on the 538 podcast, because it is Oscar week. It's, in fact, as I'm recording, the Oscars are going on right now, I think. It's now 7:30 p.m. Central Time as I say these words. So does that mean that they're recording now? Anyway, the 538 podcast had their Oscar preview episode. And so over at 538, they love their statistics. It's a statistics podcast. And so they have, of course, found several of the people who also, in addition to loving statistics, also love movies. And thus, you know, same way I'm combining statistics with movies over on the Fantasy Movie League, trying to predict box office and this kind of stuff. They are trying to, you know, the idea that, can you quantify the Oscar wins? Can you look at each year, you know, how much money has gone into the campaigns, for winning the Oscar? How well they did at various other awards, other factors that go into it, factors about the actors or about the directors or about, and you plug all this into a database, and can you get something that's an algorithm that's actually predictive and can actually tell you who's going to win what Oscars each year? And, you know, this guy is claiming, one of them, that he's got a system that right now he's up to about 75% accuracy. And really, I mean, you know, 100% would be the ultimate goal. But, you know, if they can get 80 or 90, that would be pretty darn good. If they could just plug all the information available into a computer and have it spit out with 90% accuracy who's going to win what, that's beating the odds pretty well. And so the idea that you take your love of movies, your love of statistics, and you put it together into a project like this, it was fascinating. It was awesome listening to these guys because, you know, he's gone on about his system and about the various movies that are coming up and what factors he's plugged in for him and all this kind of stuff. And the host is asking him, so, okay, so this is the thing you've been working on. And he says, Is, you know, to you, is this just the statistics portion of it? I mean, do you actually care about the movies? Do you actually, you know, if it was up to you, what would win for Best Picture this year? And it was, I mean, instantaneous. You could just see him light up on a podcast. I mean, I'm hearing his voice and you could tell he lights up and he's like, oh no, Mad Max Fury Road. And he starts going on describing how Mad Max caught him completely off guard. And it's this thing that is so metal and so badass and so, and just his enthusiasm. You're like, yeah, see, that's a guy who loves what he does. And he's found a way to combine two passions. And he was just thrilled to talk about it. It was wonderful. And if I haven't mentioned 538's name enough, go listen to their pod. I think the podcast is called What's the Point? It's the one I listen to. They have a bunch of them. They have one on politics. They're following the primaries right now. And especially the polling that goes along with the primaries. They've got other podcasts as well, but What's the Point is the one that I listen to every week. And then the last example of combining interests, if you go listen to the Moth podcast, they had a recent episode that was all stories about food. And the guy telling the story, he owns his own restaurant, and it is, you know, everything's locally sourced, and they, you know, it's a very cool sounding restaurant. And he has this long story about getting this restaurant going and things that happened. But specifically, he focuses on his story on the night that the president and the first lady came to eat at his restaurant, and the kind of rigmarole that went around that, and what happened and how his people reacted and all this. That wasn't the most interesting part of the story to me. I mean, it was a great story. All the stories on the Moth are pretty good. But to me, the most fascinating part of the story was one Secret Service agent who, he seemed to be the guy who was in charge. I mean, there was a bunch of agents working the place, but this guy happened to be, he seemed to be the guy in charge of everybody running the security detail for the president and the first lady. And so as food was being set up, you know, each thing, you know, he was, this Secret Service agent is standing in the back. And as each plate is set up to get ready to carry out to the first couple, you know, he would look at the layout of it and all the stuff that was on it, and he would pull out his phone and he would snap a picture of each dish before it went out to the president and the first lady. And the guy who owns the restaurant finally had to ask him and say, so do you have to document everything that goes to them? And the guy goes, no, this is just fucking cool. That was a quote directly from him. And then proceeds to then show him all sorts of pictures on his phone of all sorts of different foods and restaurant stuff from all sorts of all different parts of the country. And clearly it was a guy who was just passionate about food. So imagine that you are good enough at what you do that you actually are working for the Secret Service, and you also happen to have a passion for food. And so you wind up being the guy who's in charge of restaurants when the president goes out to eat. How cool for that guy. I mean, because he, again, it means he gets to visit some of the, you know, most beautiful, interesting, fanciest restaurants in the world and watch how they operate and see what they can produce. And I mean, and he was obviously just in heaven doing this, and he's working for the president. How cool is that? So anyway, it was interesting. I really, really enjoyed listening to those. That's it. That's all I've got for fingertips. So, that's the end of the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. We can go right into the pod-o-matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio pod-o-matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out pod-o-matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something, you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums, and I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. First up is 49. 49 is... Oh, it's from my son Noah. And Noah says, how many teaspoons of salt does it take to make one cup of water as salty as the ocean? Okay. Off the top of my head, I'm going to say teaspoons. I'm going to say 4 teaspoons of salt, but let me go to Google and see how right I am. Hold on a minute. Okay. So Google tells me two things. It tells me that there are roughly 6 grams of salt in a teaspoon of salt. And it tells me that there are 8 or 9 grams of salt in a liter of water. So therefore, or 8 or 9 grams in a cup. It was 35 in a liter. So 8 or 9 grams in a cup. Sorry, I did the math already and then mixed up my words. So 8 or 9 grams in a cup of water. That comes out to 1 1/4, 1 1/2 teaspoons. So my 4 number was really, really off. So if you want to be as salty as the ocean, Noah, about 1 1/2 teaspoons. How's that? All right. Let's see. What's next? Oh, I have to roll again. There we go. 11. 11 comes from somebody, anybody. There it is. Oh, my other son, Elijah. One of my other sons. How does a Zamboni work? What? What is with the hard questions, you guys? How does a Zamboni work? Yeah, that's right. Because, as my wife volunteers, this is because they ask these hard questions to mom on the way to school every morning. And then when mom doesn't know, she says, you know what? You should send that to your dad for his podcast. So, how does a Zamboni work? And why does the water freeze when it's not cold enough in the room? And how does it not leave water damage when it melts? Because they only he's thinking specifically, I'm sure he asked this question after the hockey game that we went to a little while back with the Cub Scouts. Because the floor of that arena is built with drains in it, they can lay down stuff, and then when the water drains out, they can just drain out of there. It's cement underneath it, and then they can lay down different floors for different purposes, is my guess. And so what happens is they lay down a floor that simply chills it from underneath, that they've got pipes that run underneath it and draw heat out from under it underneath, thus causing it to freeze. And even though the air above, up where we were sitting in the stands, we were probably all still wearing our jackets or coats, and it was maybe 60 degrees up there, 65. And so the air above the ice is probably much warmer than the ice itself, but not that much warmer. And air doesn't conduct heat off the ice nearly as fast as, you know, say a body or water or solid things. So therefore, as long as it's got the units underneath, the refrigeration units underneath it, then yeah, they can easily keep it cold enough to stay frozen. Especially, here in Nebraska. Well, it was Iowa that we went to the hockey game. But yeah, especially here where, it's not like it was that hot outside. So it's not that tough. How does a Zamboni work? That is also a good question. And I know it's one I've looked up before and I cannot remember the answer at all. But I can find out again. Just a second. And I'm back. I think, first off, the way they keep talking about it, Zamboni looks like it may be a brand name, because it's A, always capitalized, and B, always used as a secondary reference where they actually call the machine an ice resurfacer. So I'm assuming then that ice resurfacer is the actual name of the device and Zamboni is a brand name, but I've never known it as anything but a Zamboni. And it tells me that what the Zamboni does is it has sharp blades underneath it that shave a thin, thin layer off the top of the ice, which kind of smooths it out right away, kind of brings it down to a more uniform level. But then that ice goes into a big hopper where it is thawed just enough to become liquid, but it's still, liquid at 32 degrees, which it then lays back down on the ice to add a new layer behind it, so it'll fill in any cracks or unevenness that was left behind after the shaving. And then because it's already nearly freezing as the water goes down, it freezes almost immediately behind the Zamboni and winds up causing a new layer of perfectly smooth ice. So there you go. At least that's how Wikipedia says it works, and that's good enough for me. 15. All right, we don't have to go far for this one. 15 is from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Dark says, "Do you think Dr. Strand is not who Alex thinks he is?" In quotes, "not who Alex thinks he is." Discuss. maybe this is for those of you who have not listened to the Black Tapes podcast. This is a reference to the Black Tapes podcast, which is now in season 2. And if you're planning on listening to it, then things I say right now might be spoilery. I don't know. But clearly Dr. Strand is up to something. Clearly Dr. Strand knows far more about, his wife's disappearance than he's been letting on. Clearly his, and this was evident in season 1 even. I mean, now we've got more direct evidence that, oh yeah, he's definitely not who she thought he was. Alex is the host of the Black Tapes podcast, who is the one doing all the investigative work. And Dr. Strand, the head of the Strand Institute, is a notorious skeptic who keeps trying to debunk everything that comes up, all this supernatural stuff. He's not buying into any of it. And it was very clear even from season 1 that a lot of his skepticism, it's him overreacting. It's him clearly in denial of something. And so whatever it is that has scared him in his life, whatever supernatural thing he has seen and refuses to believe, then his work as a skeptic and a professional debunker is his reaction to that, his denial that anything ever happened. So, the more he can get out there and prove that these things don't exist, then the more he can relegate his own experiences to the world of fantasy. So yeah, clearly he knows more than he's letting on. And again, the last episode or so has led us right into that. So we're going to get some big reveals coming up here, hopefully. Now, like my brother says, he's afraid that this is really just a Lost style mega onion. And I can't remember the exact term he used, but the idea of the super onion is that you have this huge mystery, and as you peel back the layers, you get them all off and realize that underneath is a larger onion that you now have to peel more layers off of, and it never ends. And so he's afraid that that's the rabbit hole that this is going down, and it may be, but right now, I'm really kind of getting into this. It was, at the end of season 1, I was a little disappointed that we're not going to get anything. And now it looks like we're heading towards something. And, you know, if we get to the end of season 2 and all we're left with is bigger mysteries, then okay, yeah. Then maybe they've duped us. But for right now, I'm still hooked and I'm having a really good time with it. So, if you haven't listened to the Black Tapes podcast and I haven't ruined everything just by talking about it here, go listen to the Black Tapes. It's a good one. 30 comes from someone who listens to this show, I hope. And it is from Akiva. All right. I don't think I've had one from Akiva for a couple episodes. What do you think of Anthony Jeselnik as a comedian? I'll let me finish his question. I haven't seen a huge amount of his stuff, but he seems to be incredibly funny, although really twisted. Yes, he is, and he is. I like Anthony Jeselnik as a comedian. I do find him very, very funny. But I also, I liked Daniel Tosh when I first heard his stand-up. Tosh's stand-up, the first couple of times I heard it, I thought he was brilliant. It was very, very clever, intelligent jokes, and Jeselnik seems to be doing a lot of the same stuff. Whereas Tosh later, it turned out, is kind of hacky. Once you've heard enough of him, you realize that, oh, there's a pattern to his jokes, and it's always the same kind of setup, shock value, setup, shock value. And a lot of his humor comes from being shocking and inappropriate. And Jeselnik, I think, is a little smarter than that. I mean, a lot of his humor does come from the shock value of it that, I mean, he prides himself. He makes his whole career on being as wildly inappropriate as possible. But also, there is some intelligence behind it, and there's some really smart cutting humor that is getting at something. So I don't know. I enjoy him, but I enjoy him warily, tentatively thinking that, you know what? Any moment now, I'm gonna come to this big realization and go, oh yeah, no, he's just a hack too. So, I mean, like I say, I saw his last stand-up special. It's on Netflix, and I enjoyed watching it. And, you know, if he has more stuff come out, I'll probably watch that as well. But yeah, again, always with that trepidation that, oh, maybe it's going to turn out that he's just not as clever or funny as I thought he was. Darn it. So maybe that's the wrong way to watch a comedian, but I just can't help it. I just have this, I have this odd feeling about him that even though I like him, maybe it's all going to go wrong on me. I don't know what it is. 58. And he'd probably be really insulted by the idea that I just compared him to Daniel Tosh, but that was the first thing that came to my mind. So, all right. 58 is from Kaz. Kaz says, music question time. Is there any music older than 20 years old that you've recently taken a liking to? For me, he says, Spotify recently loaded up a Stone Temple Pilots after Scott Whelan died, and I found that a number of songs that I hated when they were new are actually pretty good. Trying to think. Music older than 20 years old, so we're looking at 1995 or earlier, that I never appreciated before or never heard of before, and yet suddenly now I find to be good. Man, I would have to do some research. So, yeah, no, that's true. That's true. That was a while back when the swing phase came through. I really took to swing music. Although, I don't know if that counts because I was listening to modern swing music. So these retro style bands that were, you know, whether it was the Cherry Poppin' Daddies or Squirrel Nut Zipper, groups like that. So it was new bands making old style music. And I really, really enjoyed that. I still enjoy those. I can think of, oh, what is the name of the band that, sings Pure Morning? Who does that one? Oh, it's Placebo. Thank you, Google. Placebo's Pure Morning, which is, early 90s, I think. So I think it's older than 20 years old. But I had, some music station, Pandora maybe, that I had put in some songs that I like, and it was just coming up with music. And out of nowhere, it came up with Placebo and Pure Morning, and I'm like, I have never heard this before, but man, I like this song. And I look it up, and it turns out that, yeah, it's like an early 90s song. It's right out of that era when I was in college, you know, right in my wheelhouse of stuff. I'm like, how have I never heard these? Because I really like that one song. I haven't gone out to listen to anything else they've ever done, but I like that one song. Yeah, I can't think of any good examples, really. So, maybe that was on satellite radio. Maybe that was back when I still had satellite. I don't know. Anyway, I'm babbling now. You know what? We're going to be done. So I'm going to put away R2 here, which will make him sad, I'm sure. And I'm going to turn this over to GLaDOS so she can give us a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. And my only bumper music this week, oh wait, no, I had two. I had Weezer's In the Garage for my gaming table, and I had Fingertips by They Might Be Giants for Fingertips. All the bumper music I use is available on iTunes. Check it out, buy it, enjoy it. I wouldn't put it in my podcast if I didn't love it. Want instructions on making your very own pocket mod, as I'm going to have to do right now, go over to pocketmod.com. If you want to do something very nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends, honestly. I mean, you know, you can subscribe to it, you can write me nice reviews, and I appreciate all that stuff. You can send me $20 bills if that's what you get off on. But really, recommend it to your friends. You're enjoying it. Please spread the word. Get other people hooked on it. Let them enjoy it as well. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions, topics for the Podomatic. Watch every week on the forums and for Facebook for Listener Betrayal. If you've got a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, or maybe even a co-host, or what Nerd Pride smells like, or whatever, send all that stuff to me. You know I will use it. Save me all that grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio, but to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up there. Send me a message. We will hang out together. We will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. I'm not going to do that. now it's time for listener betrayal. I've been reading ahead, and this may well be some of the best listener betrayal ever. But let's get into it. Before every podcast starts, I go out to my website, nerdprideradio.com/forums. I go out to Facebook. I post up that I'm recording, and anything you guys write down, I read off right here. I almost went over and posted up at Fantasy Movie League too, but this time I decided not to, and I'm kind of glad because there's a lot here. So, you guys are great. First off, on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums, DM Darks says, who is, by the way, so awesome. DM Darks says, who would win in a fight? Mrs. Darks, armed with a rocket launcher, but her bottom half is Barney the dinosaur. Or a cactus that screams its attacks before using them, wearing a metallic gold bikini and chained to a Martian. Okay, it depends on the capabilities of the Martian, honestly. Is the Martian working for the cactus? And if so, does he have mind control powers? Because that could be the killer here. If it's got any kind of psychic attack, any kind of mental power, then clearly cactus plus Martian is going to go for the win. But failing that, come on, she's got a rocket launcher. I don't care if she got a big purple butt. She's got a rocket launcher. But since she's wearing the bottom half of the Barney the Dinosaur costume, can we sing Start Wearing Purple over the top of it? Because if she's got her own theme song, that would weigh in her advantage as well, right? So, okay, rocket launcher. And the Martian definitely goes down. Well, cactus plus Martian. So I'm going to go for Mrs. Darks at this point, but only because of the rocket launcher. You put a rocket launcher on anybody, that's going to take care of it. All right, next one. Kaz. Ooh, Kaz got in. Kaz says, let's hear your acceptance speech for Best Supporting Actress as Harley Van Arsdale in Homeroom. Okay. Wait. Now, hold on. This is my acceptance speech. Not necessarily Harley. See, I was immediately thinking of doing this in character as Harley, in which case it would just be a replay of what's her name from the piano when she stood there and just kind of gaped in the microphone for 30 seconds because she was completely speechless. That's what Harley would do. Harley would get up there and be so embarrassed and overwhelmed by the whole thing that she wouldn't even respond. But for me, please look. Thank you so much. I appreciate this, but there are so many people here who deserve this more than me. I mean, look at all the other people from this game who have been playing. Kaz, you, for example. Amazing stuff, all right? I've been watching Zombie play. I've been watching Akiva. Lucy is always on top of her game when she role plays. I can't hold a candle to that. I mean, I have a lot of fun, but I'm just playing around. But you know what? I couldn't have done any of this without our great game master, Kyle. Seriously, Kyle, it's all about you, man. Thank you for bringing this together. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. I'm aware. There you go. That's all I got. Hold on. But my wife has her hand up. Yes, Lisa? Oh, DM Darks. DM Darks is so awesome. You have the right question. So, DM Darks actually was, and is so awesome. All right. Let's see. Kaz then says, also, check Twitter. Senator Grimlock is waiting on you. Oh, I know. I saw. Is there a new one? Or is it the same Senator Grimlock I just saw? Because I just went in and decided I needed to pay more attention to Twitter. And so I installed a new Twitter managing app on my phone. And all of a sudden, Senator Grimlock popped up. And I'm like, wow, that has to be Kaz, right? Right? And I didn't do anything with it. I did that actually last weekend at the Weeble is lock-in for the Cub Scouts, and I keep meaning to come back to it. So, all right, I'll get to Twitter. I can't access it here in the building. I actually even, just to do listener betrayal, I have to walk outside the building where I can get reception, pull up all of the pages that I'm going to read off, and then come back inside. So, unfortunately, Senator Grimlock will have to wait, but he's funny. Next up, Lucy says, some meaningless fashion event where awards are given is interfering with my Downton Abbey this evening. Do you enjoy playing croquet? Badminton? I have actually played both of those games, and I'm sure. I got no problem with croquet or badminton. I don't know if we played by all of the correct rules when I was a kid. but we certainly enjoyed playing them. I haven't played in 30 years. And from what I understand, badminton can be a far more aggressive sport than I thought it was. That those suckers really get moving. I mean, they are nailing that thing. I mean, it's, you know, like playing sand volleyball or something. You are spiking that sucker hard. So, but yeah, I don't have any problem with either game, but you know, they do involve physical activity and lots of moving around. So not exactly first on my list of games I want to play, but yeah, I got no problem with them. Next, how many fictional people are going to die in A, Homeroom, B, Paranoia? All right, Homeroom will be, we've already had 4 die, potentially 5. So that's pretty considerable out of a pool of, you know, 10 or 11 to start with. And I'm going to guess that by the end, when we're talking player characters, I'm going to guess 8 total for the player characters. But if we do it right, maybe 200 total characters in this game? Maybe. I mean, you know, there is a grenade involved, so we'll see what happens. Homeroom, by the way, since I've just had 2 questions about Homeroom, for those of you who are listening, Homeroom is a role-playing game that my brother is running on our forums, nerdprideradio.com/forums, and it is a storytelling game that he's loosely based on the Pathfinder rules. That part's not important, where we are all playing junior high kids who are doing a live-die-repeat scenario, a Groundhog's Day sort of thing where the day keeps starting over and we've got to solve things. I think we're going to solve things by blowing up a bunch of stuff, which I don't think is the right answer. I think we're being led down a path here, people. I really do. I think the clues are too convenient. I think the answers are being given to us too quickly. And my brother is smarter than that. He's like 2 steps ahead of us. He's wanting to take us down this path, and I think there's another solution. And so Harley, my character, keeps asking a whole bunch of questions, but I can't come up with any answers better than aliens are taking over and replacing our people and killing things off and somehow restarting this day over and over, and it's all aliens, and so therefore we have to kill the aliens. I think it's more than that. I really do. I just can't figure out what. I don't have the right clues, and I realize that I haven't done enough exploring up till now to find the right answers. But man, if we get another day, I'm going home. I'm leaving this place. I'm ditching out of here. I'm going to find my parents. I'm going to demand some answers because somebody's parents know something. I bet mine do too. This is there's something going on. All right. Anyway, but we'll see. We may not get another tomorrow. This grenade may be the end of us. We'll find out. And why are we slowing down? What is going on, people? We need to keep moving. But again, it's the weekend. Let's wait till Monday. Things always pick up on Monday. All right, anyway, enough of that. How many people are going to die in Paranoia? All of them. 6 times. Look, we've got 12 people playing. So that will be 12 characters with 6 clones each. That is 72 possible deaths. Out of those 72, I'm going to guess 65 of them are going to die. And that will just be for the player characters. And then on top of that, knowing the plot that I have in mind, there are any number of innocent and not so innocent bystanders, not to mention sentient robots and other entities that could be caught in the crossfire here as the sector collapses or everything blows up, trains crash into other trains, griffins come down and carry people away. I don't know what's going to happen, but it will be a lot of death. That much I know for sure. What am I saying? That's just based on past experience. That's not indicative of future performance, right? Look, it's not even that complicated a mission. Maybe you guys just get in there and get it solved and we'll be done. You never know. Could happen. And then, what other ska music besides Real Big Fish do you most want to see live? Other than Real Big Fish, look, the one I most want to see live right now, and again, I already saw it, but Biebs and Their Moneymakers, I am not kidding. They're mostly an opening act, but I would pay money just to go see Biebs and Their Moneymakers perform. Just them. I mean, if they were the opening act for some band I hated, I would go pay the cost of the concert to go watch them perform and then leave. I would be happy to do that because they were fun, so much fun. I really, really liked them. Other than them, I mean, look, I've got a bunch of other bands that are in my in my iTunes that are, you know, a little bit of punk, a little bit of ska, a little bit of this and that, but I can't ever, the names don't come to mind right off. I mean, all right, Suburban Legends, I've already seen twice and talked about them, and I love them. Mustard Plug, I wouldn't mind seeing Mustard Plug because everything of theirs that I have, I love to death. I don't have a huge selection, but a lot. Well, No Doubt, back before they became all famous and stuff. No Doubt was an awesome ska band back before they became, you know, just pop, back before Gwen Stefani decided to just take off on her own. I can't even think off the top of my head of any of the others, but there's a bunch of stuff. I wouldn't even mind. You know, give me some kind of ska festival thing where I could go in and sit in and, you know, hear a half dozen different bands in a day and wander around. I would love that crap. But anyway, I don't know. I love ska. I'm not an expert in it. I just really enjoy what I've listened to so far. So, let's see. Is there anything else here? Ooh, my battery's low. How's that? And done. All right, now it's over to Facebook. See, we're only halfway through this stuff, if that. So Facebook says, here it is. All right, my first comment is from Nelly, and Nelly says, "Hi there, smiley face. This week at work, I worked overnight to do inventory. Turns out it was all worthless because in the end, the data was input correctly and the system was still just as off as before." Big sigh. So, and while I sympathize with you, man, you know, are you sure working's good for you? It's taken away from that happy, upbeat tone that I'm so used to. man, life sucks. So she then says, "So are you watching Fuller House at all?" No, I'm not. Fuller House is not even, Netflix keeps putting it right up there at the top and giving me the big ad and display and the whole bit. No, not even a little bit tempted to go watch Fuller House at this point. I was never a huge fan of the original show. I saw enough episodes, but it was really too young for me. It was before my, or well, after my time, really. It just wasn't something I ever got into. Like I say, I've watched enough episodes that I know all the characters and, you know, back in the day when you used to turn on TV and if there was nothing good on, then you picked whatever was the least bad thing on, and that's what you watched because, well, you have to watch TV. And so I've seen it, but I'm not a big fan. So Nelly says, "I've been watching it and have been disappointed." Oh, well, then I'm glad I didn't even start. "I was hoping for more diversity, people of different races, sexual preference, orientation, but the show is white, very, very white in terms of jokes, characters, topics. I was expecting too much." Well, what do you expect? It's set in San Francisco. It's honestly San Francisco and diversity. I don't know that those go together, right? Right? Okay. Enough of that. Yeah, it's disappointing. So, but again, I haven't watched, so I can't really speak to it. I'm just taking your word for it and the vague mentions that I'm getting from other podcasts where people will talk about, "Hey, have you seen it?" And, "Oh, yeah, it was kind of a," and yeah, the consensus seems to be very similar to what you're saying. And then she continues, "Oh, we're still talking about Fuller House. There's also some slut shaming. They use the term friend zone. The lessons they teach are the worst, even in just in terms of how to reasonably deal with conflict. I could go on forever." Oh, God, that is disappointing. And then to follow up on that, there's commentary from Sarah Beth and Nellie both having a conversation about a specific event. And so therefore, I read through this in advance, and it's not going to add much here because if you haven't read the original conversations, it's way too much to go into. But if you're interested, go out to my Facebook page, facebook.com/nerdprideradio, and you can read all these comments in full and get an idea of what's going on. But next, Kaz, again. Kaz says, "Hey, happy to catch you 2 weeks in a row. As always, thank you for the show." Yeah, of course. I love doing it. Oh, hold on. Message just coming in. "My wife says only 5 kids left for lesson plans." All right. Good for you. To finish up, Kaz, "As always, thanks for the show. Where are you with recent comic books?" I haven't read any recent comic books except for Walking Dead. I just got The Walking Dead's third compendium, and I've just started it. So the TV show, as much as the TV show and the comics can be said to line up at all, the TV show is ahead now, at least the last season I've watched is ahead of where I am in the comics. But again, they don't line up all that well anymore. They've kind of diverged. So I think that is the only recent comic that I've read for real comic books. I mean, obviously, I read a whole bunch of web comics and stuff like that, and I talk about those every once in a while. But for comic books, that's the only one I've got. But Kaz then recommends to me, says, Bitch Planet and Rat Queens are both worth your time to read. Okay, I'll take your word for it, and I'll look for them. I assume I can get them in trade paperback, graphic novel format, whatever, because that's how I'm reading my Walking Dead, for example. So I'll keep an eye open. Thank you. Sarah Beth then. Sarah Beth says, Hi, Mike. How awesome are you? Oh, so awesome. Those are her words, not mine. Although I would agree. I like myself pretty well. Anyway, I am so sick of competition between groups who should be allies. The mommy wars that I refuse to engage in but can't help seeing everywhere in particular. I'm not familiar with the term mommy wars, but I'm sure she'll explain. I love competition in its place. Games. And I suppose I'll also say sports, although I actively dislike sports. Not in life, especially in parenting, which is hard enough for everyone. Why do we need to compete in who's doing it better? Who suffers more? Who loves their children more? Like I said, I won't engage in it, but I hate seeing it. I especially hate seeing people I love hurt by it. Life is hard, beautiful, messy, wonderful, and hard. I wish we could all just live by Wheaton's Law and just not be dicks to each other. So, there, my wife, I paused for a second, and my wife explained, and she completely agrees with you, and the idea that, you know, are you breastfeeding or not breastfeeding? Homeschooling versus not homeschooling. The idea that different methods of parenting and which one's going to be better for your kids and how awful a person you are for not doing exactly the right thing or not. The point you're making is, yeah, why do we bother to fight at all? And I don't know. I completely agree with you. So, all right. Next up. Oh, nope, that was it. Next up is me saying done. So I guess we're all finished for the week. So that's it. I love you guys. Come back next week, and we'll have another show or something. All right. See you then. Whoa, I can't believe I stopped it there. I forgot to say goodnight, R2. Say goodnight, R2. All right, now next week. Thanks.